This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. As you are well aware, we are in the midst of a global health crisis like we have never seen before in our lifetime. Declared in March of this year by the World Health Organization, COVID-19 has affected over 2 million people worldwide, with thousands losing their lives to a virus that some scientists have called a global nightmare. Over a month into the lockdowns that have stretched from New York to Kampala, some cities are contemplating the lifting of lockdown restrictions. However, many are doing so against the warnings of public health experts who say that increased human interactions could spark a new wave of cases that has already killed more than 200,000 people worldwide. In America, New York City, the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic, the governor Andrew Cuomo talked about a phased approach to reopening as the state continues to register few deaths and infections. But as the U.S. and some European countries look to reopen certain regions, the World Health Organization is warning that the pandemic is far from over. Across Africa, early containment strategies by some countries, including stay-at-home orders, are partly credited with the low infection rates. Figures show that confirmed coronavirus cases on the continent are a little over 33,000, and of those, 10,226 have recovered, and others continue to recover. Confirmed death from the coronavirus around 1,500. Now, obviously, those figures pale in comparison to the number of cases in other parts of the world. And like we said on the show last week, the pandemic continues to impact local economies, and this is felt especially in countries where the majority of people are part of the informal economy. Many have little to no savings and often have to depend on their daily earnings so as to feed their families. In fact, a new World Bank study predicts that remittances, that's the money that members of the African diaspora send to their families back home, is projected to drop by one-fifth this year, 2020. And that is prompted by the coronavirus-driven global economic downturn. From the Paris suburb of Montreuil, VOA's Lisa Bryant takes a look at the local economic fallout.
Almost every business is shuttered on what is normally a bustling street, except for the Western Union money transfer office. Even so, it's seeing only a trickle of customers.
J'envoie l'argent que par trimestre, maintenant je vais le téléphoner. C'est compliqué, mais on...
Retiree Boubacar Baka is sending his usual quarterly payment back to his family in Abidjan. He says it's not much, times are tight, but he says his family has to eat. With its many African residents, especially from Mali, Montreuil is sometimes called Little Bamako. On this day, I met Western Union customer Sidi Diabate, who is indeed from Mali. Diabate is sending a small sum to family in Western Mali as a Ramadan gift. He says he's an office clerk here and his job is secure. But he says times are tough in his homeland, where the coronavirus has also arrived. With Mali's borders closed to slow the pandemic, he says people lack basics like sugar. France is one of Europe's biggest exporters of migrant worker remittances. The African diaspora here, estimated at 3.6 million people, sent more than $10 billion home in 2017. But coronavirus-triggered layoffs and lost wages are affecting those transfers. Staff at the Montreuil Western Union declined to be interviewed for radio, but said their clientele has dropped sharply in recent weeks. There are other reasons for the slowdown in remittances. One is that a number of money transfer offices are closed under the current shutdown. Companies like Western Union have launched communications campaigns urging clients to send payments via internet or phone app. But not everybody has a computer or smartphone.
Pour certains aussi d'en recevoir, parce que la solidarité, elle marche parfois dans les deux sens. On a tendance à oublier, mais quelqu'un...
Laurent Roussier, mayor of the nearby town of Saint-Denis, where about a third of the population is foreign-born, says some remittances are going the other way as well. He says migrant workers who have lost their jobs here are getting money from families back home. The World Bank forecasts Africa alone could lose more than $11 billion in remittances from its diaspora this year, even as experts fear foreign investment and aid could also drop. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Montreuil, France.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Now, due to the coronavirus, we are all working from home, but we continue to cover the stories on issues affecting your daily lives, like many of you who are under lockdown and some of you working from home. And today on the show, we continue our coverage on how the coronavirus lockdowns are impacting life across the continent. We start off in Uganda, where Jonah Byakutaga, a political analyst and writer, is working from home for a little over a month since lockdown restrictions in Uganda's capital, Kampala. I start off by asking him how lockdown has affected government operations in Uganda.
With our civil service, most of the work is, I'll say, hands-on. It's majorly while you're in office. It's not something that you take home, let me say. So for us, for example, we recruit teachers. That's not something you can do at home. You have to be in the office and a lot of field activities going on. So yeah, it's private stuff that we're doing at home. If you have extra work that you have to do, maybe spill over from work that you didn't finish in office, then you can carry it home and finish from home. So it's not so much per se.
So, but how much of the Ugandan federal government is functional right now?
Well, for starters, with my line of work, since I'm in HR, we have to pay salaries for staff. So that's happening. Senior human resource officers are in office because they have to process payrolls. So that's happening for now. We're able to work and pay salaries. So majorly the HRs in HR departments in every ministry are at work right now because it's coming to the end of the month and salaries have to be paid. But outside that, the Ministry of Health is fully functional because they're the forefront of this fight. So literally the whole ministry is working. A few other ministries like Works are working as well, because they are controlling the transport sector in the country right now, so they have to be at work. Then you have a Ministry of Energy because of electricity, they are working as well. You have Ministry of Water because of water supply, they are working as well. And Ministry of Trade and the Prime Minister's Office. So those are about 6-7 crucial ministries that are still functioning right now, fully okay. operating
at this. I'm assuming also the other security agencies are still functional.
Definitely, the security ministry as well. Ministry of Security and Defense, because the army and the police and other security agencies are on the streets as well. So those are functioning as well.
And how effective has the information technology infrastructure been in keeping up with this kind of demand? You know, many people are at home, everybody's logging on online. The bandwidth must be crazy. How has it been for you? Are you able to do your calls without them dropping off? Are you able to watch, for example, Netflix and watch a movie online without any issues?
Plenty of issues. I think the best time to use the net is obviously after midnight, when hopefully most people have gone to bed. Now you get the morning periods, I think from about 8 to 10 a.m., the internet is horrible. And that's just across all networks. It's slow, all the major networks, at least it's quite slow. It buffers and whatnot, but it's understandable because everybody's using the net at that time. Now, we're not a technological country, I would say. It's just the majorly the elite, or what you call the elite or the educated, that use the internet majorly. So it's mainly the people in Kampala that use the internet. So, but we've had a struggle for sure. I won't lie to you. It's been a bit of a mess, but we're surviving somehow.
The person who has read a lot about these issues, I'm sure you know some of the popular misconceptions and misinformation that is being spread online. What are Ugandans saying about COVID? What are some of the popular misconceptions? I like to ask people this question because everybody has a different answer for it. What are some of the things that are going around about the cause of COVID and how to treat
COVID? Obviously, the big story has been the war between the US and China, pointing fingers, you're to blame, you started it, I started it, and whatnot. So you've got people, yes, discussing that, but right now, they're not thinking so much outside Uganda. I think some people are just frustrated. They're, and rightly so, they're tired of the lockdown because they want to be able to work, they want to be able to get money, to make money. And the argument, the major argument has been, is a lockdown necessary? Can't we be let out? It's time for us to go back to work. We've got few cases. It's under control. So that's been the major back and forth that we've seen. And it's everywhere. It's right. In the elite. It's in the rural setting. It's basically everywhere.
The frustration is spilling over into social media, and people are talking about that more.
Yeah.
They about, you know, finding remedies for.
On the record, for me personally, I think we're doing the right thing. I don't think we'll have an extension beyond 5th of May because I think we've managed to control it apart from the neighboring countries. A major issue now is the borders. We have a big challenge right now because so many truckers are crossing over from Burundi, from Rwanda, from Kenya, from Tanzania. Now, the last 4 cases we've had this week have been these truck drivers coming in. Right. So, and that's a major issue right now. The government has got to find a solution to sort out this.
Which shows, I guess, that even though you're able to control it in Uganda, given aside from the porous borders, even the movement of goods and services and people from one country, if one country is not able to do a good job in containing its numbers, its infection rates, then there's going to be a spillover into the next country.
Absolutely. Spot on. And that's it.
Many governments are saying by May 15th they should be going back to work. What is the word on the street in Uganda? What's the government saying?
So the thing is, our lockdown was extended on Monday. Was it this week? No, actually last week on Friday, and it was extended to 5th of May. So there has not been given a clear plan of what happens after 5th of May, but we know the lockdown will go until 5th of May. So I think close to 5th of May, I think the government will prepare another statement or another presidential address that will give clear communications. We can only speculate right now. We can't say for certainty what's going to happen, but at least with Uganda, the cases are under control. So with the current trend, my good guess is we won't have an extension. But again, that's a government call. I wouldn't as well be surprised if they chose to extend beyond 5th of May because of majorly what's happening around us in terms of our neighboring countries. You look at Tanzania, the cases are getting out of hand, about 254. Kenya as well is in 200. Rwanda is closing into 200, or about 185 or something. Burundi has few cases, but everybody's questioning if they're doing the right thing. So the lockdown could be extended based on what's happening around us, because you're not really going to open the borders with all these cases happening around us. But for now, it's 5th of May.
Well, what would you say accounts for Uganda's low caseload at this point? Why is Uganda registering less numbers than its East African counterparts?
Without doubt, it's the leadership. I think that's majorly what's happened. I think from the moment this pandemic got to Africa, I think the head of state, the president, was hands-on, and his intervention was really timely. He put measures, of course, at the beginning. We're a free country, you know. We like to party and we like to have a good social life, but we had to prepare, we had to accept the inconvenience. He introduced measures. He didn't just bring an immediate lockdown and say the whole country is on full lockdown. So he brought a few measures first. He banned public gatherings, closed bars and restaurants, and closed schools, and then closed also banned church services. So those were 4 major areas where you'd have the spread of this virus: churches, schools, bars, and restaurants. So he closed those in the first week, and then gave it about 5 days or so, then brought more measures, banned half of public transport. He allowed public transport to continue, but put a restriction on numbers of people who could be in these vans, in these taxis or minibuses. That public transport then put a curfew for 7 o'clock. So his measures were gradual, they were not instant. But I've got to say, answering your question, it was just timely intervention from the president. And of course, the Ministry of Health issued proper and accurate guidelines that have managed to keep the country in line.
In the early days of the lockdown, we saw video and images of interaction between police or security agencies and the population. I think people were kind of fighting back a little bit about being told to stay at home. 3 weeks in, are there incidences where security agencies are clashing with the population to try and contain them in their spaces of residence?
Yeah, for starters, yeah, that did happen at the beginning. I think it was a new measure that as a country or as people in Uganda, we have never experienced. I'll tell you for a fact, the last pandemic, I was probably the Spanish flu back in 1918. I don't think there's anyone in Uganda alive that went through that. So it's something new. So when the measures were introduced, Ugandans, like I said, were very casual people, social people, and we like to have a good time. We like, it's hard to keep us grounded indoors or in one specific place. So people kept going out. People kept moving, driving their private cars before private cars were banned as well. People were riding bikes, motorcycles as well, what you call borders, going into town. So the police forces, I want to say that the instructions were not beat people, but I think they were overzealous and they got carried away trying to implement what the president had said. So yeah, there were cases of them clashing, but I think 2-3 days later, the head of the army chief of defense forces had a press conference where he apologized to the public. These victims were called to the army headquarters, and they were, I think there was some sort of reimbursement that was handed out to them off camera, and it was sorted. And I think since then, I've got to say the cases have gone down. We had a death, I think 2-3 days back, and we also had a shooting of an individual again, I think a day back, but those have been few and fine between. There's a few isolated cases, so generally they've managed to calm down and they're being a bit more reasonable. They talk to the civilians now and not just beat. So it's gotten better.
Have people started getting used to staying at home and respecting the lockdown orders?
Well, for starters, myself and my family, we've stayed home for now 4 weeks. So yeah, I would say a good number. Obviously, you've got a few that will probably resent the orders and they want to go out for different reasons. For some, they'll say they're hungry and they really want to find what to eat. Maybe I'm lucky, myself and my family, maybe we can fend for ourselves and we have something to eat. But there are others who probably are not in a lucky position, and they're strained and they're stretched and they have to go out and look for what to eat. So, yeah, I think it's a small number. They're not that many. But, yeah, we do have, obviously, people that are still breaking the curfew. The curfew is at 7. So what happens is if you're caught moving out at 7, you've got to have a very convincing reason for them to let you go. So I think for medical, that's a major reason. They'll let you move if you're a pregnant lady or you have an emergency. I fell sick, I think, in the second week, and I was allowed through the roadblocks. I went to hospital with my wife. We drove out in the night at about 9, and we got home at about 1. So we went through the stop, we explained to them, they were understanding, they let us through, and then we drove back later in the night again. They stopped us and we explained and we showed them the medical forms, and I had to go back for a review 2 days later, so I had to just keep that letter. So they'll let you drive through, but if you're caught without a genuine reason after 7, then I think you'll have to answer to the authorities.
That is Jonah Byakutaga, a political analyst and writer. He's speaking to me from Uganda's capital, Kampala. We'll continue our conversation later on in the show. But first, Uganda's healthcare workers say that they are seeing some successes in hospital wards as they battle the fast-spreading coronavirus. Uganda has so far confirmed 79 coronavirus infections. Among those, 49 recoveries, and so far, no deaths. But outside of Uganda's hospitals, healthcare workers are facing stigma. For more on this story, Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
The high-risk COVID-19 ward at Uganda's Mulago National Referral Hospital has been filled to capacity over the past month. But the hospital says recoveries have kept pace with the rate of confirmed coronavirus infections. Dr. Batirana Byarugaba is the executive director at the Mulago National Referral Hospital.
We said, okay, let's see how this virus will kill people if we maintain them on their normal drugs. If they are hypertensive, we treat hypertension, we treat diabetes, we treat ulcers, we treat all forms of diseases. And I think that was part of our success.
Dr. Fred Nakwagala, senior consultant physician for COVID-19 case management in Uganda, says past lessons from Ebola and cholera outbreaks helped prepare them. He admits COVID-19 poses new challenges, including for healthcare workers.
You remain with that sense of fear, anxiety, and also for you may be strong, but your family where you stay, your community where you live and travel. And there's also the issue of stigma. If you go into a market now and the people in the market get to know you, they kind of don't want to serve you. They kind of feel like they don't want to associate with you.
Ugandan Health Minister Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng says the only newly confirmed cases of coronavirus are coming in from other countries.
Nearly 23 are truck drivers who came either from Kenya or from Tanzania. Within the country, we have not been getting positive cases. And as we draw close to the end of the lockdown, we need to have vital information that will form part of the decisions for lifting the lockdown.
Uganda's lockdown restrictions on movement and gatherings are set either to expire or be extended May 5th. To help make that decision, the Ugandan Health Ministry will conduct a nationwide rapid survey on community transmission, including 20,000 tests for COVID-19 to see if additional infections are being missed. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Welcome back, and if you're just joining us, thank you for joining us. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Joining me from Kampala is Jonah Byakutaga. Jonah is talking to us about life in lockdown, the impact on the local economy, and government response to the COVID-19 pandemic in Uganda.
So before 7, what happens between the hours of, say, 6 a.m., when usually the population is out and about, to 7 and 7 p.m., what are some of the things that you can do? Are you able to go to the market? Are you able to go to grocery stores? What kind of commercial activities are acceptable right now?
Okay, so the curfew is from 7 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. in the morning. So you're supposed to be indoors in those hours unless you've got a unique reason, like I said earlier. So after 6:30 in the morning, there are a few people that are still working. Like I said, the telecom companies are working, the banks are working.
The essential services are still functional. The people who
work. Yeah, they are.
Essential services
allowed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So the telecom companies, the banks, the water company, Umeme, who are electricity distributors, Ministry of Health, and a few other ministries that I mentioned earlier, works. So those are allowed to move. Now, what's happened is they've been given stickers that are placed on the car. So when you get to a roadblock and you have that sticker, all they ask is your identification. So you've got to show your work ID to prove that you actually work for that company, and then you're let through to drive in. So people are driving to work, those whose companies are working, and they've got stickers to allow them to move through. But you still have markets are open, so people are free to walk to a market. So you can walk to a market that's closest to you and buy food, or to a supermarket and buy groceries or whatever it is that you need. You can go to a pharmacy, you can walk to a pharmacy, and they've allowed the public to ride bicycles, not motorcycles, but bicycles. So you can ride a bicycle as well and go pick up your groceries or whatever.
Okay, I don't understand why bicycles and not motorcycles, but let's move the conversation forward. I know the majority of the population works hand to mouth, and so you have to work to make money to eat for the day, to feed the family. What kind of social safety nets has the government deployed to look after the population, those who are not able to fend for themselves?
Yeah, that's true, Jackson. So about 46% of our general population are unable to actually save. What that means is in this period right now, you've got 46% of the population that probably has no fallback plan if they're not working, if they're not getting a salary. So what the government has done is the major thing that has stood out is they've tried to give food supplies to majorly those that can't afford. So I can't say for a fact how they zeroed down on these communities, but they chose three districts in the Kampala region, Kampala, our capital city. So they chose Kampala, actually three districts in the central region. So Kampala as a capital city, then Mukono and Wakiso, three major districts in the central region. So they are providing food door to door in those three districts. They count the number of people in the household, including the children.
What about outside of those three districts?
So now that's the next step. And the idea is when they're done with these three districts, then they will extend outside the three. Now, the idea behind that is to them, the rural areas, people are able to dig because they've got farms, which is not the same case for the more central districts, because obviously for lack of space in the urban spaces. So in the rural areas, the idea is they can fend for themselves because they can dig and plant their own food.
So now almost a month in, what sectors of the Ugandan economy have been the most affected?
Yeah, one, for starters, tourism. So it's our leading foreign exchange, Anna. And just last financial year, 2019, I think brought in about $1.6 billion US dollars. So that's a huge, huge sector that's been hit. It's probably the biggest sector that's going to be affected for us as a country, because we're big on tourism and we've got quite a number of beautiful places to go to. So that's the biggest sector that's been hit. It's going to be a big challenge rebuilding that. So that's the first. The second has got to be the financial sector, obviously. We're talking banks, and majorly first insurance companies, obviously, and then banks, because there's a challenge of so many people that have got loans with these banks, both at an individual and even company levels. So we've had this week, the central bank, the Bank of Uganda, issued guidelines telling commercial banks to offer loan repayment holidays for their clients so that you could go as much as 5 months without having to remit anything from your salary to paying up for your loan. So banks obviously are going to struggle as well. I think those would be the major areas. The social scene obviously is going to be affected. And there's a lot of money that comes in from that because of the breweries. Now the breweries pay a lot of tax. We've got two major breweries, Uganda Breweries and Nile Breweries. So a lot of, they've been top five taxpayers for the last decade, and they bring in a lot of money. But with this lockdown, obviously their products are not moving. So you look at all these bars closing down, none of their products can be sold. So the breweries are going to be affected. So you're looking at obviously taxes dropping massively. And the other thing has got to be the migrant workers. Those working abroad. Again, if you look at our numbers, 2019, $1.4 billion was remitted back to Uganda from Ugandans working abroad in the US, in the Middle East, in the UK. Now, many of them are obviously going to lose their jobs. I've been watching on CNN, quite a number of people already lost their jobs in thousands in the US. So if you've got Ugandans in there losing their jobs, that's obviously another hit that we're going to take in terms of our economy, because all that remittance is not going to be coming back. Many of them won't have jobs. Some will probably come back home looking for what to do. So yeah, right. I think those would be the major, major sectors hit.
And as before I let you go, Jonah, we talked about how the leadership in Uganda should be credited with helping fight the spread of COVID-19 in the country, especially implementing the lockdowns early on. But we saw videos from President Museveni doing his push-ups inside his house, encouraging people to stay at home. But there's also been talk that the members of parliament, the legislators, have not done their part, in the sense that they've been asking for money under the pretext of, I don't know what, mobilizing or monitoring COVID cases. What can you tell us about that story? Because I think it did rise a little controversy. I saw some social media posts, especially on Twitter, people criticizing the local members of parliament. What was that story about?
Shocking. So we are in times where so many people are struggling with no food, and I mean no food. Some are literally starving. And you've got members of parliament that are paid, what, close to 20 million Uganda shillings. And that's just, you're not even considering all these allowances, these massive allowances that they get, these travel allowances, these per diems that they get when they're seated, when they're having sittings and whatnot.
And with that, we come to the end of today's show. Many thanks to our reporters who contributed to the show. And thanks to our guest, Jonah Byakutaga in Kampala, Uganda. Thanks to you for tuning into the show, whether you're listening in online or on radio, via FM or shortwave. Connect with us on Facebook, we are on Instagram and on YouTube. I'm at Upfront Africa. Until next time, as our African elders say, in the moment of crisis, the wise build bridges and the foolish build dams. That is a Nigerian proverb. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, wishing you good health and blessings.